Impossible to remember what she thought it would be, what she'd imagined it looked like now that she was here. The door was brown, and Kate stood staring at it in a kind of paralysis, winded after three flights of stairs, a confusion of keys splayed heavy in her palm. Much like the new suitcase at her feet, these keys seemed to be an ugly prop, an aid to some kind of performance. The apartment was owned by her mother's one-time best friend, off on the post-divorce cliché of an around-the-world Thailand etc. trip. A week ago, Kate had stared at this stranger's face on a Skype screen, a face fussed with earrings and silk scarves, glitching in the sputtering Wi-Fi, exclaiming,
"Oh, honey, I can't believe you've never been to New York!"
And then,
"Oh my God, your mom and I had such adventures when we were your age, because you gotta travel, you gotta live, you know?"
And Kate didn't know. Didn't know what live meant in this context. She suspected, though, that it meant something you'd see on a Pepsi commercial. Jumping into a waterfall in your underwear, piling into an open-top car to the beach, that sort of thing. But she'd said, "Absolutely," into the screen like she knew. Like, yeah, she totally knew. As though she were the kind of person who was up for it and down for it. The kind of person who wouldn't be troubled, for instance, over how those two semantically opposed phrases could have come to mean, in essence, the exact same thing. It was only now, a master's degree completed dutifully, pointlessly, a commitment to a PhD, made miserably, uncertainly, that she realized the world truly did not give one single shit whether you'd done your homework. This skyline, for example, the extent of its indifference was operatic. She'd watched it through the window of the cab and heard blooming Gershwin and an earnest voice in her head subsumed by its own parody saying, "He adored New York City. He idolized it all out of proportion." The Empire State Building on the right, the Freedom Tower on the left, with its central spire naked on top. In the days before, Kate had nervously clicked her way around virtual maps, zooming in and out to learn the sequence of the bridges up the East River, Brooklyn, Manhattan, Williamsburg, doing her homework. But she hadn't zoomed close enough to see that the struts of the Williamsburg Bridge were pink. Who paints a bridge pink? Those struts had come at her too fast, a metronome assault of pink flashes on blue. And now here, these keys, this door, its spy hole's beady avidity. Too easy to imagine an eyeball pressed up to the other side, watching. The keys worked, a minor astonishment, and then the door opened. The apartment was small and cluttered. A sofa overpopulated with the kinds of throws and cushions that people describe as ethnic. Kate wondered what Caucasian cushions might look like, and the answer, of course, was these, because they were from IKEA, not Rajasthan, turquoise and purple and stuck all over with white cat hair, tufts of it spindled around the cheap sequins. Somewhere in here was a cat to be sat. She couldn't bring herself to call the cat's name. The name embarrassed her, but it was more than that. Speaking anything out loud, alone in this other woman's apparently empty apartment, seemed like an audacity. Speaking anything anywhere, in fact, had come to feel like that. Lately, she could think the words fine, could sense their calm, grey delineations in her mind, neutral and precise. But when she began to say them, to actually shape them into sounds to propel out of her mouth, the whole project seemed to fail. On the large bed under the window, a bed almost as big as the room itself, the cat was waiting for her, facing her, staring at her, paws tucked under itself, the pose prim and a little censorious. When she moved closer and reached her hand toward its head, it flinched to sniff at her fingers, then made a couple of twitches of its whiskers and looked away. Disdainful. It didn't need her. The self-sufficiency of cats. Their implacability. To be a cat. But then, she remembered they were sociopaths. Scientists had said so. There seemed to be a problem with applying the human construction of sociopath to a non-human species. Wouldn't that make everything non-human, sociopathic, in human eyes? Could that be right? It seemed quite arrogant.